Market moving insight and analysis. Join Jim Cramer, David Faber, and me, Carl Quintanilla, on the opening bell hour of CNBC Squawk on the Street. Good Thursday morning. Welcome to Squawk on the Street. I'm Carl Quintanilla with Jim Cramer. We're glad to have David Faber back after a couple of days. We're live from separate locations. Bulls do hope to add to Wednesday's gains as companies like Delta and Expedia raise billions in fresh capital. Jobless claims, though, 4.4 million bring the total to 26 million over the past 5 weeks. Oil bounces and the European PMIs remain historically low, 16 in France. 10 in France, 16 in Germany. Jim, though, your tone this morning is relatively hopeful.
I am a creature of who reports and what they say. And I can literally, I find it hard to remember as many companies as saying good things, even as obviously we're in the midst of a pandemic. And I don't think they're all just cockeyed optimists. I think they all expected business to fall off a cliff, and they haven't. Then again, these are large cap companies. These are not the companies that the government's trying to protect. These are arguably the winners, the companies that are going to get stronger. I listened to Lee, and Lee Cooperman was talking about what it's going to look like on the other side. I look at my desk. I have reports everywhere here. These are all companies that are going to come through with fewer competitors. And that may be bad for the U.S. consumer, but it's good for the stock market. David, would you please Jim, offer some contrary view and say that I'm too optimistic, please?
Well, here's one, Jim. I mean, you've made this point before on our air that we cover large, public, well-capitalized companies.
Right.
And the story coming out of jobless claims today is a small business story. It's more difficult for us to cover. It's a little more granular. The data is not as fresh or as high frequency, but we can't look past that.
Right. I mean, let's look at the railroads. The railroad's principal enemy are the truckers. I think the truckers, the smaller truckers, are going to have a huge amount of problems here. The larger ones, no. Union Pacific will be fine. I mean, Union Pacific's great versus UPS. But this is just the battle of titans. And when the smoke clears, they're all going to raise rates. There's going to be very little competition, and it is going to be great for these companies. Again, it's going to be cataclysmic for people who want to ship, but the big are just getting bigger, and the small, well, let's just say they're trying to get a handout from Mnuchin, and when they get it, it keeps them open for a little while. But this is the big, this is the cataclysmic change between companies that have great balance sheets and companies that don't. And I see many companies that have great balance sheets and their stocks are worth owning, which is why we have a higher PE than Lee Cooperman would normally say we should have, because I think that these companies are winners. And I maybe they shouldn't be, and maybe it's not right, but they're winners.
But Jim, I'm sure you go through the course of the day and have plenty of people questioning the valuation in the stock market, given their expectations for the economy and where we stand, even if things do get better. You only need to listen to the likes of John Gray this morning, for example, from Blackstone, the president of Blackstone, which reported earnings, talking about the fact that he doesn't see a V recovery. I think he said it's more like a Nike swoosh. Guys, take a listen and then let's discuss.
Okay.
I think we're not in the camp of a V recovery. We think it feels maybe a little more like a Nike swoosh, which somebody gave me that line yesterday. It feels more gradual in nature. And that's because, you know, we don't have sort of a cure-all for this virus right now. It's going to take time. We will. The good news is we seem to be over the hump in terms of the peak in most of the U.S. and Europe. And so parts of the economy will start to reopen, but it'll happen gradually. It'll be in certain sectors, certain geographies.
You know, I mean, guys, we've all interviewed so many leaders of businesses on the course of the program over the last few weeks. So many talking about a recovery like that, one in which they don't expect to see earnings come anywhere near where they were for last year for at least another 2 or 3 years. So yes to all the things you're saying, Jim, and then I come back to this idea of what can we really expect in terms of how the market is going to treat valuation, or are we simply in a new world where we're willing to accept multiples of which we've never seen before?
Okay, I think this is great, and I think the metaphor that Jonathan Gray uses, always so smart, is Nike. Let's take it as a double entendre. First, yes, I actually don't mind that shape because it does at least indicate that there's a pulse. But second, let's take Nike. Okay, this is a company that went from being 0 to 40% direct to consumer. It's not hostage to the mall anymore. It's going higher. It's an international company. It's finding markets like China doing incredibly well. It sells at 37 times earnings. Well, you know what? If it's the only survivor, maybe it should sell at 50 times earnings. Now, there are a lot of things that happen in life that are unfair. It's unfair that Nike could go to 50. It should go to 18 because you know what? There is a sentimentality about how stocks can't do this well. But if Nike wipes out everybody else, then Nike's going to have a V recovery. And the fact is Jonathan Gray did not say what I most fear, which is there'll be no recovery. Dr. Fauci gave me a no recovery yesterday in a very nice smile. He does that thing. He said, you know, and this is going to be even worse in the fall. And I'm thinking, well, there goes the NFL. But then I start thinking, well, Nike's doing quite well. And I'm watching this thing over the weekend, which is a Nike ad. It's also happened to be about Michael Jordan. And I come back and say, OK, Nike winner, everyone else loser, everyone. And that's what's happening.
Right.
And that's a different world. We haven't seen that. Every small and medium-sized business that competes with Dollar General may not exist 6 months from now. Well, does that make Dollar General worth more or less?
I don't know the answer.
I think it makes it worth more.
There's two things here, Jim. One is the difference in the way people in Asian markets respond. You heard this in the Las Vegas Sands call last night. They're used to dealing with things in ways we're not. Nike sells goods more than they sell services. And that's why these PMIs today are going to be so important, because the effect of the pandemic on services, our economy largely, is going to be reflected in non-manufacturing indices, not about making sneakers and shoes and clothes.
Right, but we're not trading hair salons. Thank heavens we're not, because they will trade like oil did on Monday. This is not a barbershop economy. What this is an economy of titans and losers. Now, we didn't used to have it like that. I think it's terrible. My father was a small businessman. My father's business would have been out of business probably Feb 22nd. I mean, that's how quickly he would go under. And I look at Nike and I think they just get stronger and stronger and stronger. And maybe it's not fair. But, you know, do we really sit there and say, you know what, I'm going to buy Union Pacific. Oh, no, it's not fair to buy Union Pacific. No, it's just that Union Pacific is a survivor. Even though they say business is going to be bad next quarter, the fact is Union Pacific is a winner because there's only a couple of rails, and they don't need a bailout. Versus I listen to the airlines, and I think, you know, I'd rather be in a coal car going across the country than I would be in some of these airlines. It's, you know, kind of open air, you know, a hopper, get some sun.
The airlines are proving successful in raising capital, not just from the federal government.
But that's what they're successful at, raising money. How about raising customers?
Well, all right, but yeah, true, but I'm not quite sure how they're supposed to do that in the current environment.
By making it safe to fly.
The fact is, Jim, a lot of companies, okay, and I assume that they will, because they are in business to try to make money.
Why, because they wipe the
seats
down?
There are a lot of companies that have, they're going to have to do a lot of different things. We've talked a lot about it with the various executives. We'll see whether there's a middle seat for a while, whether there won't be. It's unclear exactly what the experience of flying is going to look like. But they have been able to raise capital. By the way, many companies who are in a position to have gone out and done what they had to do in terms of trying to raise capital. There will be plenty that are unable to for various reasons. I mean, Expedia this morning, again, at the center of the storm when it comes to travel. The Squawk Group talked to Barry Diller last week.
Right.
They announced that deal. They're going to raise $3.2 billion of new capital. Now, $2 billion of it is debt, new debt financing, but they do raise $1.2 billion from private equity. We're talking about Silver Lake and Apollo stepping in there, getting board seats, a significant stake in Expedia. But they're going to be able to survive as a result.
Liberty Media
this morning, I'll be talking to Greg Maffei in the next hour. They're doing what they call a reattribution, taking Live Nation and moving it from one entity, the Formula One entity, to the Sirius entity, all the result of which would seem to be to strengthen the capital position on either side. So there are companies taking actions, Jim, as much as they possibly can to try to strengthen their balance sheets to make it through. The problem is we don't know how long. We just don't know how long it's going to take and where they have to get to.
Well, if we get an antiviral, we're not going to get a vaccine. I am like in the vaccine 2022 committee. If we get an antiviral, which makes us feel like this isn't a death sentence or we can go to the hospital, all of these stocks, the valuations you see are going to be justified. And we know we've got just a few more days before Gilead reveals remdesivir. What happens if remdesivir is good? I think what happens is we're going to fly again.
There's a lot of hope on that. And obviously that Stat News article, Jim, are leading some people in that direction. We'll get a lot more on this. David mentions media. We do have a big call on media stocks out of Evercore. Goldman goes to a street high on Amazon and a lot more. Plus, we'll be watching the PMIs come in all morning long. Back in a minute. Oil prices are building on yesterday's gains, and of course, America's fracking boom is beginning to collapse. Our Brian Sullivan has more on that this morning. Hey, Brian.
Hey, Carl. Good morning. Yeah, I mean, listen, it's funny. We're talking about the price of oil soaring, but the price of oil is still under $20 a barrel. I mean, these times are pretty insane. You know, and they are hitting the U.S. fracking industry, and really they're going to start to hit the job market as well. On a day with the unemployment number coming in the way it did, I don't think we could look at any other side of the story. So let's talk about the potential slide. Look at that. So according to Rystad Energy, that is the number of new major fracking wells. It's the biggest month-over-month drop in the history of the data set. Those are new wells, and you can see a steep drop. Almost nobody is going to drill a new well now. What about existing production? Okay, well, U.S. production falling just about 900,000 barrels per day from last month. We're still at 12.2, much higher, million barrels a day, much higher than we were a few years ago, but down nearly a million. You've got rig counts off nearly 500 from last year, and you've got refineries running at 67%. That's a double-edged sword, though, guys, because 67% means that they don't need oil, which means they're going to store it. But still, you're starting to see this once sort of great fracking boom, fueled in large part by hard work, sweat, and debt, start to come to a very creaking halt. Will it be fast enough to stop oil slide? I don't know, but it is slowing.
Is that why at the time when the USO and the rookies who traded the USO knocked it down, is that why Apache is up? Is that why Occidental's up? Is that why Halliburton's up? Is that why almost every oil stock I follow is up? And one of these is not true. Is it the oil futures and the USO, or is it the oil stocks?
Jim, oh, man, listen. This is a harder question than who should the Eagles pick in the third round tonight, right? Maybe a linebacker. I don't know. Here's the problem.
I think first round they're going to go defense.
I have been trying to figure.
I do.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Okay.
I don't know the answer to that. I'm trying to find out because I can tell you this much, Jim. The way the USO has altered its prospectus the last couple of days.
Are we doing a math?
We're just going to buy a one-month contract or whatever.
Right.
Yeah, now they're just every three times in, what, 2 days, they're just going to decide we're going to change the basis of our investment fund. Can you imagine, the QQQ deciding, oh, you know what, we're actually just not going to own Microsoft. We're going to go and buy a bunch of shares of whatever. I'm trying to understand that very point.
You did a great
There's
job
so many
this morning.
With-
I thought you were fabulous on the five this morning. I loved it that you talked about it.
Thank
I thought
you.
It was just great analysis. Congratulations. I'm not kidding. It was really good.
No, Jim, it means a lot because nobody knows more about it than you, and I really appreciate that. We're trying. Listen, I'm trying to figure that out because there's something funky going on with these traded settlement futures, TAS futures. Couldn't go negative on the ETF. The short answer is I don't know, but, man, I tell you, when somebody figures it out, it's going to be something because there's something weird going on.
Well, Brian, you're going to find it out before anybody else because you're working 24-7 on it. I just can't thank you enough for what you're trying to do. I go back to David now. David, how you doing there?
All right. Yeah, I'm doing all right, Jeff.
Are
I'm
you?
Doing all right.
I mean,
you know
I
what?
I'm
telling
you,
yeah,
I'm going to come over there and give you a Hawaiian punch.
You know, I'd take it. Anything for some contact would be nice, even if it means a punch in the face for me, Jim. Liberty Media this morning, we mentioned it, announces what they're calling a reattribution. They're moving Live Nation from Formula One to Sirius. Of course, the Atlanta Braves, Live Nation, Formula One, all of these companies caught to a certain extent in the difficulties we find ourselves in. Greg Maffei, CEO of Liberty Media, is going to join me later to discuss all of that. We got a lot more Squawk on the Street straight ahead.
Futures implying some slim gains at the open, adding to yesterday's gains as well. As the picture from corporate America continues to fill in, we'll get to Target and Unilever and Domino's and Discover and a lot more when Squawk on the Street continues in a moment.
Welcome back to Squawk on the Street. Time to get in a mad dash. Jim's going to cover Las Vegas Sands, the company, of course, reporting earnings. I believe it was after the bell, Jim. The China part, of course, which is Macau, so important. A net loss of $166 million for the first quarter. That compared with a $557 million gain, or net income, right, as we used to call it, a year ago. But they're looking to open there. They are opening, and the question is, will they come?
There was a really kind of an amazing thing that happened, and it's a short seller's nightmare. The other day, Las Vegas Sands suspended its dividend, so therefore you figured it had to be the worst. Last night, they came out and said the pent-up demand for gambling is incredible, and so therefore you have to buy. They gave a schedule of debt, David, and there's no big maturities for a couple of years, so they certainly have the opportunity to make it happen. And if you really believe in this one, I suggest you think about when Mike Maddox sent me his health care plan of how to open. Literally, they're describing about how the air conditioners have to be. So I mean, the gambling companies have really thought a lot about how to entice people in a safe way. And there's also tremendous optimism in China, David. This made me want to go buy Alibaba, frankly. I mean, the Chinese, they are celebrating as if, you know what, we've conquered a lot. And yes, I know Eunice Yun showed a gym that was closed yesterday. The governor of Georgia should take a look about what happened to the gyms there. But there is a notion that while they're not COVID-free, that they somehow triumphed over COVID. And we, our notion, I think, sorry to be a bearer of what I see as gloom, is that we've been beaten by COVID. And I think it's a shame that our narrative is so different from theirs.
Yeah, well, there's a larger story there, which is the emergence of China in a way, what the relationship between our countries are going to, is going to be like following this, of course.
Yes.
Given that their economy is certainly rebounding far quickly, more quickly than ours is planned to. But back to Las Vegas Sands. I mean, Macau is closed for a couple of weeks in February, but it's not like the traffic came back in any meaningful way in March, Jim.
No, not at all. But this notion of pent-up gambling is really kind of interesting because it presumes that there's just this element of, you know what, people have not been able to have any vice, but they can't stay away from vice for too long. Death, taxes, vice. And I read it and I said, you know, at least they're optimistic. So if you want to have a kind of a belief that maybe things can turn around, read the Las Vegas Sands note last night and you'll have tremendous faith in the ability of people to want to lose money at a table.
Okay, we'll do that. Are we headed to a break now, guys, or are we,
are we going to take it to the open? You've been away for a couple of days. What do you think? Break? No break? It's your call.
No break. No break, Jim. We're going to just go straight through.
All right. Because then
Carl's
involved here as well. If that's the case, David, we got to talk about Lam Research. There's a company that people are negative on because they can't meet the demand. Now, this is the kind of negativity I'm getting used to. Netflix. Well, you know what? They had to suppress demand. You know what? When you have too much demand, see, that's called good. I'm getting
angry.
Typically,
it is that way.
Until here.
What are you getting angry about?
That people are so negative. David, they ought to just give someone a hug.
We got 26 million people filing for claims. I mean, we got an employment rate implied at 17.
In the 1930s,
they would have
no unemployment.
We got companies like Target saying that.
In the 1930s, they've had
companies like Target saying their margins are being dinged by the shifts, which are benefiting certain elements of the operation,
like
digital.
The way Target was,
but that comes with a cost.
Target's crushing everybody else, and they're doing that at low prices. No, I'm not saying it's happy days are here again. I'm just saying that that the companies themselves are doing well. The unemployment rate is horrendous, and it is 1930s-like. And believe me, if they could burn oil like they burned burn grain under the Agricultural Act in 1933, they would do it. I'm just saying that we do have good unemployment benefits, that there are things that are happening that could tide us over. But my main level of optimism has to do with science. I simply do not believe that all these scientists together are going to fail, not in a vaccine, but in something that make it so that when you get this disease, notice I said when, not if, because it's way too contagious, it will not be ending on a ventilator unless, unfortunately, you're very, very old. And that makes me more positive.
It should, and it may be some time, and I'm not sure it's going to be remdesivir, which at least as far as I'm aware at this point, Jim, is still going to be infused in the hospital for people who already are sick.
That's why
what you're talking about is an antiviral regime that you would take much earlier upon getting a test because you have some early symptoms, and then that would be the end of it. Very similar
Fuji.
To when you feel
maybe
like you have the flu
Fuji
and
drug.
Call your doctor and get Tamiflu.
But what do you think of the Fuji drug?
Maybe
there's good things going on there.
The drugs, and listen, you know, it's
so depressing just to follow the press conferences.
And you should. And I'm in particular touch with one company who I brought on a couple of times, Ridgeback Biotherapeutics, because they are testing with healthy people so far for their antiviral in
the
UK. Couple of more weeks on dosing. It's all going very well, apparently, from a safety perspective. And then they will move on to actual trials in people who have COVID. And certainly the hope is, Jim, that they could, that it will be effective.
Only a vaccine could make it so that we have, right, that we could have a world that's somewhat like what we used to. I think Lee Cooperman's right, there'd be big changes. But if we get a vaccine, David, we will have some degree of normalcy that could prevent social unrest, which could happen eventually if this keeps up.
All right, so everybody's too negative, and then you're talking about social unrest?
Well, no, because I think the scientists are going to solve it, that's all. No, the jobless claims are horrible, like Carl said, but we don't talk enough about the scientists who are hard at work who may have breakthroughs. I wish
Jim,
there were
last
science
week
channel.
You were worried about going to Walgreens, and I'm wondering, it sounds like you know something or you're betting on something. Maybe it's Gilead at the end of the month, but your tone has really changed from just your personal worry about leaving the house, seeing your wife. That was just a few days ago.
That's correct, Carl. That is correct. I do feel better about what Gilead's doing. And it's not just fly by night. The trial's going to be revealed very soon.
I believe you. We're anxious to get that next blog post. Guys, let's get to the opening bell here and take a look at the big board. It's Mark Castelnuovo, NYSE Facility Supervisor at the NASDAQ remotely. Chief People Officer Brian Smith celebrating. Guys, take your daughters and sons to work day, which is today. I don't know about you guys. My kids are at work with me.
Well, my kids are teaching English in Spain. A great, great place to be right now, Spain. She's been out of her apartment. She got out the other day. She got to go to a store. 6 weeks. Not bad. What a city to live in, right?
Not bad.
Of all the cities to pick work in. Anyway, I'm of mixed emotions, Carl. I'm kind of, some days I get up and I say, well, the jobless claims are awful. And other days I get up, I say, I just heard another hospital chain say good things about remdesivir and the Fuji drug that's a pill. So, yes, every day is an up and down day where it's very difficult to try to be even keeled.
Yeah. We mentioned Target.
Well, meanwhile, though,
guys,
Jim, the S&P is only down 30. Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead, Carl. Sorry.
Sorry, David. The delay is troublesome at times. But Cornell did talk to Becky about the way comps have surged but normalized since the beginning of the quarter. Digital up 275%. And then the degree to which margins are being affected by apparel markdowns, limits on foot traffic, and the less profitable digital business. Take a listen.
As we went into the month of April, and millions of Americans are sheltering at home, and they've heard from public health officials that it's best to try to minimize your time in physical store locations, we saw a huge spike in digital comps. For the quarter, we're saying we're up over 100%, but in April alone, our digital growth is over 275%. And we've just seen Cyber Monday occur almost every day, except the volume is twice the size that we've normally seen on even a Cyber Monday peak.
If you're,
Jim,
Brian,
some say it
Brian,
shows just,
Brian didn't do it right.
Just how unprofitable digital grocery can be.
Yeah, Brian, Brian surprised me. I would have said if I were Brian, you know what, we're crushing the competition, but that's not Brian's style. The month of April showed that we are dominant. And when the smoke clears, people have changed permanently the way they shop, which is they love to come to our store. They like to, this is something that Chipotle told me too. They like to call ahead. They like to have the stuff put in their car. They like to go home. So I think Brian should have totally told the narrative differently. And instead of focused on margins and apparel, which were disappointing, he should have talked about the new way to shop and how this is the way that people love. But Brian was too negative, along with a lot of other people. He didn't understand the virtue of his own model, I think, which is that he is going to be a winner when the smoke clears, along with Costco, along with Walmart, I believe maybe Lowe's, maybe Home Depot. And then there's a Goldman Sachs piece today about, and I thought it was kind of amusing, that the greatness of Amazon not being recognized by the stock price. One of the greatest performers of all time. So, Brian, listen to me. Stop. Brian, too. I mean, can you imagine you have to tell these CEOs, don't you realize you won? I mean, maybe he's from Whitestone. He's got that Queens negative attitude where he's down. You know, you see these Queens guys, they come on, they're moody. They're still mad about Amazon. Oh, hi, David. Sorry, I forgot.
Yeah, I am still moody. And you're right. You know, we grew up in Queens in the 70s. It definitely shapes your worldview. What can I tell you? It's just you can't get rid of it. But to your point on Amazon, by the way, I mean, as you said, Goldman did upgrade it. What do they expect? Get this. They think that revenue and profitability is going to be above consensus. That's really a shock for a company whose stock price is up 30% this year. And the market cap is now poised to eclipse that of Apple's. They're very close in terms of market cap at $1.2 trillion and $1.21 trillion. Dollars.
Someone
I continue to wonder, though,
David,
Jim, whether they're going to see... Yeah.
Amazon boxes when I got home last night. And of course, it's kind of like the pyramids in Egypt. You have to leave them out because of COVID. And I came in this morning. I left them out for 24 hours. I opened it up. And it seems like I got like Edge shaving cream that I used to buy at Walgreens. Carl's absolutely right. I wouldn't go to Walgreens. I'd rather, again, take that flat top train across country than go into a plane. And I'd rather go to an Edge factory than I would go to Walgreens. But the things are changing. How people get things are changing. And they're not going to go back. They're not. Which is why small and medium-sized business, and I'm not talking about Ruth Chris, David, needed this money so badly.
No, but, to your point on small and medium-sized businesses who do represent a significant amount of at least the advertising on Amazon.
Right.
Remember, advertising has become a very profitable, important part of their business, not large revenue-wise, but large margin-wise to a certain extent. And for Google and for Facebook, small and medium-sized businesses are not unimportant, Jim. And one does wonder whether their advertising declines are going to be significant.
Why is Facebook story? Is that the India investment? Is that what that is?
I don't know.
Isn't it a quandary
that
we've had numbers cut Facebook and the stock is now up 12 points? What is that about? Optimism? India?
Interesting. By the way, Heath Terry, who made this Goldman call on Amazon, also said that Netflix subs would come in 10 plus. Of course, Netflix even blew away that number. But he had a good call on Netflix, and now he does see 2,900 Amazon. By the way, you guys see this story about Bezos returning to day-to-day management for the first time in years?
Yeah. I thought that was interesting, since a lot of us thought at one point he was day-to-day management. But there is these companies. FANG is really... FANG's on fire. Everyone's sick of FANG, but man, it just, except for the FANG, the Apple numbers are cut every day. Apple now, the expectations are very, very low. And that's the one I think is going to be most important because their numbers cut pretty much every morning you come in, numbers are cut for Apple.
Right. But if you've owned any of these stocks, you really have not been hurt by this incredible. Well, I should say it's not as incredible a downdraft anymore, is it? With the S&P only down 12.5% for the year.
They don't have
exposure
to China.
Only down.
And they don't have that much exposure to the service economy other than be a UPS. I mean, look, people are studying at home. And that means they're using Google to cheat in their exams and they're using Zoom and they don't care if it's encrypted or not. I'm on Zoom way too much. I don't know about you guys.
It gets a little
million.
After a while.
I mean,
What are you on WebEx, David? Because you don't trust the Chinese?
That's true. I don't. And I do WebEx when it's important, when it's business related, yes. But otherwise, we're Zooming. We're doing the cocktails and whatever else. It's all right. I mean, I wouldn't mind being actually able to clink glasses with somebody in person. But
it's an introvert's paradise, David.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what I found out? I'm not as much of an introvert as I thought.
Wow, I know. Remember just a few weeks ago before COVID, you said that you didn't like people? Wow, have you turned around?
Yeah.
You called the bottom in that people not liking thing.
It's like Blankfein's tweet yesterday when he said, Lloyd said he wished someone would have told him back before this happened how happy he actually was at the time. It sort of reminds me of contactless pizza delivery, Jim, as Domino's now pulls their guide. Comps for the quarter up 7-1 versus 1-6 in Q1. But even with that kind of bounce, can't really tell you what the rest of the year is going to look like.
Yeah, I didn't, you know, the U.S. wasn't perfect. I mean, we're going to have Domino's tonight. Domino's is another way. We remember it's the millennial way. The stock was up 20 yesterday, so let's not do too much. But millennial way, you don't even have to, you can put the tip on the actual. You don't even have to touch. There's no touch. Domino's is no touch. Now, David, I know you would say Domino's is no taste, and that would be wrong. That was the old days when it failed in its miserable 1-1 head-to-head, apples to apples, against cardboard. But that is no longer the case, even though cardboard is tasting better, according to WestRock.
I fully expect that is the case. But as you know, I'm always going to be supportive of local pizza places, never more than now, of course, certainly in New York, where they're going to be needed and where they're having such a difficult time. Businesses are having such a difficult time.
But can't
they
do it outside? Don't you do takeout outside and DoorDash?
You can.
Uber, whatever.
You can. You know, pizza certainly takeout is a very important part of it, but most restaurants, as you know, can't rely on that alone. It's just not nearly enough to make it work.
That's why Darden, it got that money, and you know, that's the thing. Olive Garden got a fortune, and the stock's up 10 if you bought it on the deal. And Olive Garden is that's right. Going to be the, not that we're all going to go to Olive Garden, but it does represent a great bargain. I'll go with you,
David. BMO today, BMO upgrades Chipotle, Darden, Brinker. Although they continue to point out that fast food, they think, is going to offer the greatest upside as these reopenings sort of roll out around the country.
McDonald's was up big yesterday. It was up 8 points. Chipotle call was just miraculous. Chipotle is – it's set up for this. Remember, Chipotle had food airborne issues, and they have all the things down for – they were like pandemic central, and they are doing so well. My hat's off to them. And there's – you know, they too have a demand problem. And there are only a few companies in the world that have demand problems. Netflix has it. Chipotle has it. Amazon has it. Target, before Brian talked it down today, Target had it. And then I started thinking maybe I'm too bullish on Target. I'll have to check in with the CEO.
Are you worried
Jim,
at all
Brian
about
was on
Tyson
yesterday
and Hormel?
Yeah, because my Chapel Trust owns Tyson. How can that stock be up? What a wacko market. Their execution problems have been legion and terrible. Hormel, when they came on, told me not to worry about the food chain. And I'm going to bet with them. They have a tremendous record of raising dividends, too, by the way. And you may not think much of Spam, but there are 35 million people headed to the unemployment rolls. Spam is always a solution.
Jim, would it surprise you that Chipotle had told its landlords that it wasn't going to pay them rent, would make it up on the back end, but had chosen not to?
I got news for you, David. I think you're going to be real estate investment trusts that pay Chipotle to be in their malls, their strip malls. Right now, the only space that they're negotiating with, I believe a lot of them, is the right to be able to stick a Q-tip up your nose. Because they need those outdoor spaces. And I know it's not really a Q-tip. It's actually synthetic, a swab made by Puritan. But if you listen to the call, you'll hear that the Real Estate Investment Trust did not like the Chipotlanes. But now they're just grateful to have Chipotle versus EPR, which has EPR's REIT that has cinemas, which are not paying their bills. 45% not paying their bills. Brandywine, by the way, a very small REIT was the only one that I feel people are really paying their bills. You got to follow the REITs because a lot of them, the tenants are just stiffing them.
That was my point. I mean, I've seen a letter from even Chipotle to its landlord saying, you know, we're not going to pay now. We'll make it up on the back end, but for now.
Well,
we're not
Chipotle's
going
got a lot
there.
Of cash, so, I mean, but if, they have leverage, David.
Yeah.
You know who doesn't have leverage?
They do.
Victoria's Secret.
Who?
Victoria's Secret.
No.
Not a lot of leverage there.
They don't.
You want
they
to talk
don't.
About that?
Although
that's
it
kind
is,
of your
it,
world.
It is important to point out, sure, that the case that that Sycamore came with to try to break that deal yesterday in Delaware is fairly weak, at least some would say. Now, of course, I don't even know if it's been assigned yet to a judge there in Delaware. But, you know, they're saying they're relying on this covenant that says you have to follow your past practices and you didn't do that. Well, yeah, of course they didn't do it. First of all, in a lot of states, they can't open. Secondly, they're trying to conserve as much cash as they possibly can. Are they arguing they should have kept all their stores open where they could and have kept all their employees employed and blown through all their cash? So it's going to be interesting to see how that actually ends up in terms of when we get a ruling on that, Jim, because the legal experts I've spoken to who look through the case certainly don't think it's particularly strong. We will see. And they posit this, that if, in fact, they do get out, well, then it means that a lot of companies conceivably will be able to get out because it's about past practices. Well, you got to change your past practices when you're dealing with something we've never seen before.
David, if they lose, they can close it tomorrow. They may lose and then close it. Not unlike a Credit Home Lending in that 2009 period, the ninth largest of mortgager. In the country that was a subprime mortgage, and it was won by a hedge fund because they lost a big lawsuit, and they closed it the day that they lost it.
Yep, they closed it, and then they were done. Then they could declare bankruptcy.
Done.
That's right, yeah.
So I don't know.
Yeah.
Who wants Victoria? You know, you can't sell a lot of bras in a mall that's closed. Just saying. David, just saying. They sell bras,
Carl,
David. That's what they do. They
I'm aware.
Bra,
I mean,
bra-oriented.
Not that I'm. It's the last place I'm going.
That's the business.
Yeah.
Guys, Dow's up 180. NASDAQ almost 1%. Getting some crazy headlines out of BOJ. Let's get to Rick Santelli this morning. Hey, Rick.
Hi, Carl. You know, if you look at a week-to-date of 10-year note yields, you can see that we've moved up just a little bit. We were defined by 54 basis points, which on an intraday was the low, but it was also the all-time low yield close about a month ago. And if you look at the way we're hovering now, we've given up a couple of base points. Hey, we have breaking news. Our April preliminary reads on the market indices, and of course the manufacturing PMI at 36.9, that's an all-time low. It follows 48.5, which is an all-time low. But do keep in mind, these are all-time lows to a series that started in April of 2017, so not a huge amount of history. If we look at the service PMI, it's 27, of course, an all-time low. And if we look at the composite, putting the two together, it's 27.4, an all-time low. Now, we can debate as to how much information you're garnering from basically a coronavirus-closed economy in these weak numbers. But nonetheless, we keep track. Maybe it'll give us clues as to how and when we start to recover and bounce off of some of these levels. Let's get back to the market. So here we are at 60 basis points on a 10-year note that settled at 62. So we're down a couple basis points. We're actually getting a little bit of flattening. So let's go to a couple of day chart of 10s minus 2s. You know, as we hover right here, it looks to me like we're about 39, just under 40 if you take 10s minus 2s. So you remember, we're in the low 30s. We shot up into the 50s. Here we now hover right below 40. This thing is seeking middle ground here as the long end just finds it hard to grab on and see higher yields, although maybe what's going on in Europe eventually will give us higher yields. So let's turn to Europe. Let's look at a 30-year Italian. It was toying with 3%, as you see on this chart, that starts in June of 2019. But, of course, we know S&P Global is going to take their investment-grade rating away most likely tomorrow, and the ECB has figured on that. So they made very special rules that will still allow them to lend full collateral on their paper, even though it's slipping into junk. And finally, how did that affect the currency? Let's look quickly from a February 2020 on the euro versus dollar. So you can see that we've been sliding back down after a lot of volatility. But if you really pull back to a three-year chart, you can see exactly how weak the euro currency is. Carl, Jim, David, back to you.
All right. Rick, thank you very much. Jim, I wonder if you think the market is betting that those PMIs and claims have bottomed, for now at least.
Yeah, I think so. I think that when you hear states talking about open up and you see that the curve has been bent in a lot of places, I think that there's a sense of Not that the worst is over, because Dr. Fauci told us it wasn't, but that we have reached some level of normalcy that is not great, but a lot different from where we thought 1 month ago. Remember, 1 month ago was when the hedge funds gave us a kind of a couple of hedge funds came on and gave us a very, very negative view. And we're a month away from that. And I think we're starting to realize, you know what, the world is a not great place, but it is a world. And that's what I think is being reflected.
With that, 23-6 on the Dow. Let's get to Bob Pisani this morning. Morning, Bob.
Modest gains, but we're sort of stuck in a trading range 1 month after the new lows that we had. Just take a look at the sectors here. It's nice to see banks bouncing a little bit, energy bouncing. Been good performer all week, energy, despite what's going on with those crazy markets that we've been seeing. Industrials, materials, staples are lagging a little bit here. It's nice to see some of the other stuff moving up. But today, stocks like Walmart and Clorox, Costco, Tyson, those guys are just sort of hanging back a little bit. Overall, I just want to highlight today, 1 month from the lows. March 23rd was our bottom there. That was, what, 22.37, the close on the S&P 500? It's been quite a journey since then, since March 23rd. Effectively, we're up 25% since that bottom on March 23rd. And since April 9th, we've essentially been range-bound. Range-bound is a pretty wide range, 150 points on the S&P, 2730 to 2880. But that's essentially range-bound. That's the new reality here. Volume has been notably lower. We had the lowest volume day yesterday at the NYSE in 7 weeks. So volume trading definitely lower. Volatility, intraday volatility is definitely lower, but the VIX is still stuck in the low 40s. So we're not going much lower than that. The market still seems to see a lot of potential problems out there around the reopening here. Stocks by market cap. This is very important to point out. This has been a big cap rally. I wish we had the S&P 10 because you could see what's really going on here, but the S&P 100 is only down 15% since the February 19th high. The 500's down 17. The mid cap's down 28. And the small cap's down 32%, right down the curve there. You can see what's going on. This is what I tell you every day. Yesterday, we had 9 out of the 10 biggest stocks up 2 to 7%. When that happens, the whole S&P is going to rise 2%. It doesn't matter what everybody else is doing. So bear in mind, this has been very much a big cap guide, big cap rally. Every day, we tend to look at the company's withdrawing guidance. This is a sobering reminder, despite all the hoopla and hope that's out there, of the companies that are pulling their guidance. Pulte, Unilever, Volvo, Grainger, CSX. This is all in the last 24 hours. The list gets longer. Union Pacific pulled its guidance too. O'Reilly Automotive, Hershey's, Boston Beer Company, Netgear, Unilever over in the Netherlands also pulled their guidance. We've also had furloughs as well in the last 24 hours. Expedia's furloughing people. One of the big REITs that's out there. Summit Hotels also furloughing people. So just that's a very easy way to remind yourself what's going on. Just want to know how important that Target comment was, by the way, that you heard earlier here. First quarter up 100% on digital, April up 275. But they've had that surge in retail comps and the trends are now softening. And I think we're going to hear this from other companies. We've already hinted at it from Coca-Cola, Smucker's, Campbell's Soup, Costco. They've said similar things as well. Guys, back to you.
All right. That's a very long list of pulled guidance, Bob. Thanks very much, Bob Pisani. Still to come this morning, the CEO of Union Pacific, speaking of UNP, on earnings and the impact of COVID-19 on the railroad giant. Don't go anywhere.
Don't miss Greg Maffei in the next hour of Squawk on the Street. Liberty Media's CEO will be joining us to discuss what they're calling a reattribution, the movement of their stake in Live Nation from Formula One too serious. But we're going to talk about a lot more than that, including the future of baseball, given they own the Atlanta Braves, racing with Formula One, and whether we'll see a concert again in 2020.
Let's get to Jim and stop trading.
David Ricks was on this morning. He's one of my favorite CEOs, Eli Lilly. He talked about some franchises that are really on fire. The Trulicity diabetes franchise is incredible. This stock had been downgraded earlier this week because they felt that the valuation had gotten too high. Take a look at what winners winning means. Eli Lilly has been coming through this period as maybe the best of the pharmas other than J&J. And you just got to just applaud these guys. They are inventing things. They are coming up with things. And they are the reason, again, he's got a drug that's an RA drug that he's trying to use for COVID-19. Someone's going to win. Someone's going to beat this thing, not in a vaccine form, but in making it so that it could be more Tamiflu-like and less scary. Eli Lilly, potential winner.
Wow. Or fair to say, Jim, your optimism on therapeutics is...
I'm sorry? Yes, David.
I was saying, you know, we've never had a vaccine for HIV. Obviously, it killed 50 million people.
Look, we never really came up with anything. Yes, I mean...
But there are antivirals that work completely. The vaccines
are far away, and Moderna may be in the lead. I'm just saying that one of these things is going to stick as an antiviral to get people out of the hospital faster. That's all I'm saying, but that would be a major change in psychology in this country. If you did not think a death sentence meant going to the hospital, it just would be different. The fear level would go down. I'm putting it out there.
It's going to be determined, the impact on consumer behavior. Jim, and you got Domino's tonight.
Right. The contactless, banana peppers, right? Okay. Hold the cheese. They have a no cheese button, which is also great for India. Tomato pie. And you'll come over to my house one day when we're ever allowed to see each other again, and you'll have it, and it'll be one and done. You'll never come again, but it's really good.
I'm coming to your house in Italy. How about that?
Oh, David. My olive oil business is Genco, and we are having real good numbers.
Finally, Jim, anybody going to pick the olives? Yesterday. Yeah.
I'm here.
Jim, yesterday, DataTrek said, if you want some signs that there's long-term confidence, let's get the number of 1% moves under 30 for the quarter, which is what we had in Q1. And I wonder if you think today is a beginning of that.
Yeah, I woke up today and I said, holy cow, there must be something wrong. The market doesn't look like it's moving. That's what we want more than anything else in the world. We want to get away from a 2008 scenario where every day we can come in is down 4 or 5. This is a very important day for me because it just feels like a kind of day that we used to have. Wouldn't that be something? Wouldn't it be something if anything was the way it used to be? Anything. Anything.
We'll take it as it comes, Jim. Signs are small for now, but we'll hope. You've been listening to the opening bell on CNBC's Squawk on the Street.